Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
All right, so we now move on to our keynote address. We'll conclude around 6 o'clock. In some ways, he needs no introduction because he's been referred to so many times already this afternoon, but just very briefly, Sal Castro was born in Los Angeles in the 1930s, grew up in L.A., saw his father deported in the 1930s, witnessed the Zoot Suit riots in 1943, went through the schools, both public and Catholic schools in Los Angeles, where he faced discrimination in both schools, joined the military, witnessed discrimination in the military. On one particular trip where he was being sent from California to a base in the South, he stopped over in Dallas, went to the restaurant in Dallas with his full U.S. military uniform, and they would not serve him. And Sal says, "I had the U.S. military uniform, not the Mexican military, but they still wouldn't serve me." And so he dealt with discrimination. He came back to Los Angeles, got married, had two children, went back to school, eventually got his degree at Cal State LA, got his teacher's credentials, began to teach at Belmont High School, began to organize the students there. They forced him out. They sent him to Lincoln. The rest is history. He began to work with the students, organize the students, got engaged, of course, in getting them involved in the walkouts, was arrested for it as part of the LA 13, but won that case, continued to teach, eventually being reset to Belmont High School, where he served two or three decades, continued working with the kids in the Chicano Youth Leadership conferences, as he still does today. Those of you that are interested in attending, especially as college counselors, can also talk to Sal about that. Give him your information so that he can follow up on that. This is a man, as I've often said to my classes, who has made history. Very few of us get the opportunity to make history, but Sal Castro made history. And in my estimation, there is no question that the walkouts would not have occurred without his leadership. With his dedication, his commitment, his inspiration to the students, his encouragement as they looked up to him as one of the few Chicano Latino teachers at that time. This is a man who made a difference. And he's a teacher who has continued to work with kids over the years, and he's a remarkable individual. It's been my pleasure to work with him over the years. And so it's my pleasure to introduce you to him, to you, Sal Castro.
Muy buenas noches, and sinceramente, Mario, thank you very much. You're a hard act to follow, all of you folks. You did a tremendous job, all the folks that have been here prior to me. And in other times I've spoken at first, so I don't, I guess I warm up the audience, but man, did you folks warm up the audience. Let's give them a hand. They've been tremendous. We've had several symposiums like this, and one at UCLA, and this far surpasses it because really, it really, really got down to really what this is all about, and I really appreciate it, and thank you very much. I know it was a lot of work, and I'll show you a couple of things so we can get started. And mostly, Mario says keynote or no, I'm probably just going to answer questions. Hell, you guys have it all down. First of all, let's show you this. I want to brag about this. This is what, and the reason why, I guess, I gained notoriety is right here in front of you. Here it is, right there, the movie, Waka. All right? There it is. And that dude there with a small tie is supposed to be me, you see? And, when I was young, I was a good-looking bastard, right? So they had a hell of a time casting me, all right? And first of all, I told him, wait. If you're going to do a movie, my love interest has to be Selma Hayek or J-Lo. So, no hago nada, all right? I mean, I'm no dummy. Then they said, how about Benjamin Bratt. And I said, hey, that's cool, all right, suave. But you see, he had a long-term contract, so he couldn't get out of it, so he couldn't do the part. Then they said, Mark Anthony. I said, Mark Anthony, está muy huilo. No, man, not him. this is not going to be a musical. So finally, they settled on Mike Pena, a Chicano kid from Chicago, did a tremendous job. And if you remember, he played the locksmith prior to the movie. Remember the locksmith in Crash, where some guy was shooting at him and he had his baby in his arms? Very emotional scene. And then later, after the movie, he got a couple of break. Well, he got a break because of the movie, and he played a two-man role with Nicolas Cage in the Twin Towers. Remember that one? He was a policeman that was trapped down below. Now he's an FBI agent, okay? I told him, hey, what about to slow down, man? You're tiring me out, okay? So anyway, the movie is actually based in part on the documentary that's been mentioned before by all the folks that have been speaking here before. The movie is based loosely on a documentary that was done by PBS called Chicano, four-part series. If you haven't seen it, try to get it. Unfortunately, you can't buy it. You've got to rent it from a library or figure out some way. And some of the colleges do have the four-part series. The part that they were talking about was part three, taking back the schools. Well, see this guy up here with a big nose? That's supposed to be me, all right? So apparently President Clinton in 1996 saw it. He said, hey, that dude's got a big nose like me. Invite him to the White House. So, man, Avato from East L.A., born and bred East L.A., now in the White House. Orale, don't steal nothing. But anyway, it was a hell of an experience going to the White House. And President Clinton, big calote dude. I mean, he could have been a tight end for University of Arkansas. And we walked in to the Blue Room. Remember now, this is May 2nd, 1996. They were celebrating Cinco de Mayo. And he walked in, great big smile on his face. I didn't see Monica Lewinsky anywhere, but he had a smile on his face. But, you know, I told him something that was very serious. And when I spoke to him, I guess I was going back and thinking that I was Emiliano Zapata and I was Marlon Brando in the movie Viva Zapata, because I called him my president. I said, but my president, we are in a crisis in our communities. We lead the nation in high school dropouts. We lead the nation in college dropouts. And then we also have the dubious distinction of leading the nation in teen pregnancies. And then he looked at me, and he looked over to the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, former mayor from Cisneros, Henry Cisneros, former mayor, and he says, we have to do something about this. And they began talking about a national conference that was going to bring people in from all over the United States, specialists on what could be done. But you know what happened is life took a turn, weird turn, so he couldn't get into it. But he wanted to get involved in making the change. I hope whoever becomes president will get into it very heavy. Whoever becomes the next president will get into it very heavily. I know that sometimes we think, damn, the walkouts 40 years ago. And that's what we were talking about. We were talking about kids dropping out. We were talking about the fact that teachers did not respect the kids, and they were doing, you know, committing atrocities emotionally on the kids. And 40 years later, we haven't gone too far. But wait a minute. Yes, we have. In spite of the fact that you have the Pew Report, the Harvard Report, the scorecard report, every report that you see, we're still low man on the totem pole when it comes to education. But did we make a difference way back 40 years ago? Hell yes, we did. All you've got to do is look at the state legislature in California. You see a hell of a lot of brown faces. All you got to do is turn on the TV and look at the news. You sure as hell see a lot of brown faces there. All you got to do is look up and down the universities here in California, in Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, the Ivy League schools. Hell yes, is the Chicano Studies. Somebody asked the question, well, when were the seeds planted for Chicano Studies? They were planted as the kids were planning and the 55 demands that they had of the schools. They said, teachers, you've got to know who the children are. You've got to treat them with respect. You've got to learn about Bernardo Galvez. You've got to learn about Ellen Ochoa. You've got to learn about Joe Castro. You've got to learn about Manuel Chavez. Who the hell are all these people? A bunch of Taco Bell owners or what? No. Bernardo Galvez. Let me regress a little bit. Not regress, whatever the hell you got to do, but I want to read a letter to you. When I saw the Super Bowl just the other day, I said, wait a minute, what the hell is this? They started reading the Declaration of Independence, okay, in the Super Bowl. If you saw it at the very beginning, it was a very beautiful scene. You had all these football players and former football players reading the Declaration of Independence. But they forgot something. I mean, it was great. They had music. They had all this good stuff, you know, what Jefferson talked about and so forth. My letter to Fox Sports, because Channel 11 or Fox is the one that produced the Super Bowl. What in God's name were you people thinking with your selective American citizenship? You saw fit to deny 44 million Latinos, the largest minority group in the United States, representation in reading the Declaration of Independence. Because it's true. It was puros gabachos y puros negritos reading the Declaration of Independence. What the hell is this? After all, there were 9,000 troops that came up from New Spain, Mexico, during the American Revolution to help George Washington with 44 ships blockading Natchez, New Orleans, Baton Rouge against the British. We were involved in the Revolutionary War. God damn, we were American. We're as American as tacos. Could you not contact or find the telephone numbers of Tony Romo, Jeff Garcia, Joe Capp, Anthony Munoz, Tony Gonzalez, Jim Plunkett, Tom Flores, Max Montoya, Ron Rivera, Danny Villanueva, Nick Eddy, to name a few of a few to read that great American document? Kids that watch TV are always looking for role models. Shame on you. Guess what? I got a letter of apology from the cabrones. But more than that, you can get a hand. But more than that, I shot off another. I says, hey, I'm on a roll. So I shot off another letter. Because those of you that watch cable and those of you that watch the talking heads on Sunday morning, you got Tim Rossett, you got Chris Matthews, and then you've got Stephanopoulos, Jorge, all right? Anyway, I said, I am attaching a letter I sent to Fox Sports with a copy and also a copy to the NFL regarding the Super Bowl pregame reading of the Declaration of Independence. Do you think this letter applies to you? When was the last time you had a Latino reporter or correspondent on your roundtable? You can't find, can you not find phone numbers? It's always interesting on your shows when white reporters pretend to show expertise in the diverse Latino community in the United States. And it's true. They're always asking some gabacho about the Latino community. And I mean, you know, and then they fake it. And then everybody believes it. Let's find some phone numbers of Latino correspondents. I bet the first place to start is California, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico. As I said, our kids are always looking for positive role models. Sinceramente, Sal Castro, Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. Okay, let's see what happens. Let's see if we get a change. Damn. As in 1968... We were the subliminal minority. You know, we were not a huge population then. But even then, our kids were not told about our American heroes. I mean, and we got a ton of them. Manuel Chavez, an example. A hero of the Civil War. Manuel Chavez, a hero of the Civil War? You got damn right. He helped hold off the Confederates in northern Texas, the Colorado Volunteers, Lieutenant Manuel Chavez. Joe Castro. Who the hell was Joe Castro? Guess what? In 1862, the Congressional Medal of Honor was invented or created. And the first three minority members of the American Union Army that received them happened to be a black fellow by the name of Harrison Clark from West Virginia. Another young man happened also to be African American. His name was William Carey. He was from New York. But the third young man to receive it was Joe Castro from San Francisco. Can you believe it? The biggest battle of the Civil War, there's tons of Chicanos buried in that cemetery. Has any teacher ever told you that? Has any teacher even said it at the University of California, Santa Barbara? I tease them all the time when I do the graduations. I'm available. I'm cheap. I do weddings, bar mitzvahs, and anything else you want, and I don't charge, all right? So my jokes ain't too bad. So, I mean, we need this. We need a Chicano Studies then, so that young teachers or old teachers, whatever, would be able to go back to their classrooms with information that we had available about tons of American heroes. Ellen Ochoa. Some of you, I hope, in this room know who Ellen Ochoa is. But then you can walk through science classes all over the state of California in high schools, and they won't know. They'll flunk the class. Let's ask every science teacher in California schools. And by the way, we have a hell of a lot of Latinos in California schools. In fact, back in L.A., we got about 80% already. 80%. You ask any science teacher in a high school who Ellen Ochoa is and why they should mention her name in a science class. She's a Chicana astronaut. We got four of them. Damn it, that's important that our kids know this. It's critical that they know this. They want to be just as American as anybody else. They don't want to feel as outsiders coming into a program. Even teachers use that. They perform the cardinal sin of saying, well, children, as you know, your recent arrivals, and let me tell you about our American history. No, cabrones, we were here already. We didn't move, we just learned English. You know, when they got off the boat there at Massachusetts, the pilgrims, we didn't ask them for their green card. They ain't gonna say, nos fregaron, right, didn't they? You know, it's really interesting. Let me shock you even more. And teachers should be teaching this now. They should have been teaching this earlier, 40 years ago, after 1888, because we were fairly in good shape here in the Southwest up until 1888. We were teaching our children. They were being taught bilingually, learning two languages. They did have pride because teachers were aware of what was going on. But after 1888, when the huge influx of Yankees came over, nos fregamos. But let me shock you. We talk all the time about the bearing, about where we came from, the first settlers or the first people of the Western Hemisphere. Well, we think we came through the Bering Strait, or there was trading back and forth from the Bering Strait. We came from China. Proof of that was that if you go to the museum in Mexico City of early art of the Western Hemisphere, and then you go to Beijing, China, and you look at the same thing in their museums, you can't tell the difference. What the hell's going on? I got positive proof that we came from China. I mean, this is DNA and a half that we came from China. I got it right here in this bag. Chinese chili. Give me a half for that. That's good. You know, look at that. Chinese writing. I left the other bottle in my car. Sweet and sour chile, all right? But So, you know, we've told about this trading back and forth, and it's true. And then we're told that they went down to Mexico and the pyramids, the Olmecas, the Maya, the Aztecas, and then they worked their way even further south to Guatemala and so forth, and down through El Salvador and Panama, and kept going down to Peru, the Incas, and then kept going even further south, down to Chile. That's all well and true, but guess what? They left some point missing. Let me transport you right now. Let's get a big seven, whatever, the biggest plane. Let's transport you, all of you, right now, this minute, to Ohio State University. So you know what? The anthropology department can show you the pyramids in Ohio where our ancestors built before they went down to Mexico. How's that? I'll take University of Pennsylvania, and we got pyramids there too. University of Arkansas, Mississippi. Lausanne, what the hell's going on here? We were the first real Americans. And as I said before, we didn't move. We just learned English. And they tell us we're illegal aliens? They have their nerve, cabrones. They think, you know, illegal. Well, first of all, my parents, I think, were married when they had me, so I ain't illegal. But but secondly, aliens, okay? Like we came from Mars. That's true. We came with flying saucers, a flying tortilla. Órale, vengan, llegamos. Come on. Most all of us have relatives back in Mexico, back in Latin America. All of us do. Who can deny that? And yet, the way they talk about the undocumented here. Que gacho, somebody talked about that already. That's terrible. These bastards that call themselves Minutemen are just, you know, you're just hiding behind the term Minutemen. They're really KKKers. They hate the hell out of us. They want us out of here. And that's why, folks, I'm a little worried about one of our candidates, Barack Obama. Like the man, he's great. But is our country not racist any longer? Are we ready to elect a minority president? When we're hated so much, think about it. I want to vote for the man. You know, but I don't know what's happening. Are we ready to do this? Or is it going to be like the movie that Chris Rock made, Head of State? Remember that? 20 minutes before the election, the brakes come on. Do you want a black president? Bam! Everybody takes off to the voting polls because they didn't want a black president. Are we ready? And if we do get Obama, folks, we're going to have to work like hell to make some changes so that he can get elected. But one of the problems that I see, and I'm doing a political speech here as an old political science teacher, you know, we talk about the youth getting involved this time. Well, hell, I remember the youth being involved in 1960 with Jack Kennedy. Not Robert Kennedy, but Jack Kennedy. And we, you know, they in the primary, they voted for Jack Kennedy, but came the national election, and the youth were not around. That's why he almost lost the damn election. So I know if you're committed, you better work like hell for your candidate, because otherwise we're stuck for another 4 years, at least, with the same pendejada we got now. Okay? So be ready. So anyway, enough of that politicking. But back to 1968. And back to the way the kids were treated and the changes that these same heroic kids, because, hey, nobody mentioned it, but 36 people got killed in Watts. 36 people got killed in Watts in 1965, and most of them not by the police, by the U.S. Army. They had tanks in Watts, folks, tanks. There was martial law in Watts. People had to be in their houses by 9 o'clock. You know, that reminded me, history repeats itself. I guess that's why history teachers remain in business. That reminded me of 1943 when I was a little chavalón and East L.A. had martial law. East L.A. had a curfew. If you were Mexican in East L.A., you had to be inside your home by 9 p.m. Otherwise, you're liable to get shot. One of my friends who was 12 years old was killed by a policeman, shot in the back because he was outside going to go get some bread, and he was mistaken for an adult, and they shot him. No big deal. My country, this of thee, with liberty and justice for all. Cabrón. The children in those schools, when they walked out, they had seen what happened in Watts. They had seen the killing. And in spite of that, they walked out proudly. They walked out proudly so that today we have Chicano studies here. We have Chicano studies across the country. One of the things we don't have, though, is huge teacher training that we wanted to have. We wanted to have that thousands of young people coming through Chicano studies. If they were going to be lawyers in our community, they would get 15, 20, 30 units of Chicano studies so they could begin to appreciate who the people were that they were teaching. Thousands of young teachers who they then would become dynamic and have high expectations of those kids in our schools. Thousands of social workers, thousands of engineers, thousands of architects, so they could really begin to have an appreciation of who we really are. Americans with Spanish surname. Americans that fought so bravely in every war, as I told you, from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War to the Spanish-American War. Teddy Roosevelt was a colonel fighting in Cuba. He had a regiment called the Rough Riders, heroic group. Oh, hell yes, rough and ready, Teddy Roosevelt. But guess what? When was the last time they told you who the Rough Riders really were? They were a bunch of Mexicans from New Mexico. How's that? The Rough Riders were a bunch of Mexicans from New Mexico. In fact, the first sergeant, Teddy Roosevelt, used to call him Mocte, because he said, you look like Moctezuma. You see? Do we hear that in our schools? Do we hear that at Roosevelt High School in East Los Angeles? Hell no. We should. When was the last time when you saw the movie Saving Private Ryan? Did you see any Mexicans getting shot or killed in Saving Private Ryan? Were they like, no? There was a sea of red there at Normandy. But did you see any Mexicans? Are you kidding me? Two of them got the Medal of Honor right there on the beachhead at Normandy. Yet they didn't see fit to put these guys, these two characters in the movie, at least Latino looking, with Spanish surnames. I don't have to tell you about World War II. We have won so many beautiful Medals of Honor. I was going to say, damn, no, it's a hell of a thing to get a Medal of Honor. Above and beyond the call of duty. There was the first guy that got shot on Pearl Harbor, December 7th. He was an ensign, Manny Gonzalez, who took a plane up from in Pearl Island. It was Pearl Harbor, and there was Pearl Island. He took off there from the naval airport to try and stop the attack. Hell no, we went right into the teeth of the attack. And he was shot down. Did you see that in the movie Pearl Harbor? Come on. Our children needed heroes then. Our children need heroes now. One of the things that I proposed, and I think we could pull it off because we got so many brown faces now up in Sacramento. And by the way, we got brown faces in Washington, D.C. too. Guess what? The Hispanic. And I hate the word Hispanic. We ain't from the island of Hispaniola, Hispanic. Está feo. The only high thing we've got is high dropout rates. But we're either salvadoreños, guatemaltecos, venezolanos, cubanos, peruanos, chileños. I could go on, beliceños, and so forth and so on. But we're not Hispanic. That's a big pendejada. And somebody mentioned that, you can give me a hand for that. Yeah, somebody mentioned that was Richard Nixon's doing, but then Ronald Reagan refined the term, And they hold this guy to be a saint. I want you to look at the part of the Chicano series when he confronted Cesar Chavez with such disdain and lack of respect. Cabrón, Ronald Reagan. when he supposedly negotiated with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers. Let me remind you of that, okay? Vietnam, folks. In the Forgotten War was Korea, by the way, and I was in the army, and I never went to Korea. I fought the Battle of the South. That's why I'm leery about Barack Obama, because I fought the Battle of Desegregation in the South. Gran cabrones down there, and it hasn't changed, really. I didn't know where to, you know, I was going to go to the bathroom, and it said, you know, black, you know, Negro men, Negro women, white women, white men for the bathrooms. Where the hell do I go? And then, and that hasn't changed too much, folks. That has not changed. The more huerito you are, the more you're accepted. The more prietito you are, the less you're accepted. And you know, in our veins flow the blood of all three races. You know, somos, as I said, somos asiáticos, but many of us are also bien prietos. Because you know why? Because when we came out of the caves in Spain, we were living in caves. We were the first tigers, orale, right on the wall. We were wearing loincloths. These people came in and took over Spain for about 600 to 800 years. They got us out of the caves. They brought with them a form of public education, government, architecture. They even brought a language that we started using, and we use it today, and we didn't know we were using it. Ojalá, oiga, alfombra, pantalón, camisa, chaleco, oiga. Who were these people that civilized us for sure? Where did they come from? They came from another continent south of Spain. What was that continent? Africa. Somos negros. We're the Moors. And then a few of us that remained in northern Spain remained part of the northern European stock. But you blend it all together, and then you have a beautiful people, la raza cósmica. That's why we're so beautiful as Latinos. Give yourself a hand. Our kids have to know that. Our kids should have known that in 1968. Our kids should not have felt to be outsiders, because they weren't and they're not. I'd like to see this super credential created so that we can strengthen Chicano studies even more, much more than it is today. A super credential where you got to take 30 units beyond all the education units, 30 more units of Chicano studies, and we're going to throw in another maybe 20 of African American studies and some more Asian studies and some more Middle Eastern studies. Man, at your fingertips, you're going to have so much information, so much enrichment material that any given point, at any time, wherever you're teaching math, science, history, you can talk, you can bring kids in all over the place. You know, somebody was taught the other day, I spoke up in Sacramento, and they talked about a congressman had died. A congressman, one of the first black congressmen back down in Los Angeles. I said, hey, look, I got a newspaper right here talking about this black congressman that died. And I said, okay, I got a class full of black kids and Latino kids. Now, what do I do to include them all? I said, hey, you know what? The first black congressman just died. And you know what? That's tremendous history. And you know there was another part of history too. The first minority congressman in California was Romualdo Pacheco. Actually, he was born in Santa Barbara. He later was a colonel in the Union Army during the Civil War. You see, right away the Negritos, hey, they picked up because the Negrito congressman and the Latinos, hey, they picked up Pacheco, Romualdo. You see, you start bringing them in. They peel all part of history, all part of American history, all Americans. That's what we need. And you see, with that credential, then we say, a school that has more than 50 or at least 50% minority, you got to have a high percentage of those teachers. Well, I don't want them to do it out of the goodness of their heart. I'd like to give them more money. I'd like to give them 20, 30, 40,000 more a year. Because now they're specialists. They're neurosurgeons. Neurosurgeons make more money than MDs, don't they? And I say this, make the requirements very strict, very stringent, so that the teachers say, hell no, I don't want to do that to teach a bunch of Mexicans. And we say, there's the door, cabrón, and don't let it hit you on the way out. Because, give me a hand for that one. We do not need teachers of that caliber in our schools. One of the biggest problems we have is the extreme low expectations of those teachers. And the BS thing about burnout. You know, I'm burnt out. No, cabrona. If you really wanted to teach, you never burn out. You see, you give 110% to those kids. I don't want to hear, well, these kids don't want to go to college. They're not filling out the SAT applications. You know what you do? You go out of nutrition and you pull them by the ear. No, cabron, ven pa' acá. Leave her alone. You got her phone number. Leave her alone. You come into my office to fill out that SAT. You're going into my office to fill out the financial aid package. And yes, you're going to apply to college. And I don't want to hear that bullshit that you're not going, because you're going. I may have to kidnap you and take you, but you're going. You know, I believe in education so much. And one of the big good things about the movie, that it had a hell of a theme at the end. It really was. You know, that education is so important. Higher education is so important. I'll give you a little story that Dr. Garcia always asked me to recall. Lincoln High School, 1965. The student body vice president was Anita Contreras. Bright, bright kid. But one day I walked into the main office. And by the way, before I continue, Dr. Garcia, the principal at Wilson, his name was Parisi. And that guy was so conservative, not only was he wearing suspenders, but a belt too. That's how conservative that dude was. Anyway, Anita Contreras crying in the principal's office. Hey, when there's somebody crying in the principal's office, you're in trouble. And then I said, Anita, what's wrong? And then I looked further in, and her parents are there. I said, damn, she's really in trouble. I said, and so the principal saw me and said, oh, Mr. Castro, Ingles, George Ingles. In the movie, he's got hair. In real life, estaba bien pelón el vato. But anyway, Vicky remembers that. She's cracking up on that. So anyway, hey, remember, Vicky, when you brought over Henry Roquillos para destaparlo? Vicky used to bring me, you know, some of these guys, some of these so-called specialists from L.A. City Schools to come to my office so I could give them a little lecture. Para destaparlos, porque estaban bien tapados todos. It didn't work most of the time, but I think it did work a little bit with Henry because he later became my deep throat. You'll have to read Dr. Garcia's book so you'll know what we're talking about, a deep throat. Anyway, Anita Contreras, Mr. Castro, can you please tell the parents here, you know, Anita has just been selected for a full scholarship to Occidental College, a full ride. And in those days, a full ride was about $85,000. Now, you figure, you know, today's money, $85,000 then. I mean, that was a hell of a scholarship. Occidental College, four years, full ride, everything. And they said, but the Ingalls said, but, you know, the stipulation is that Anita has to live on campus. And the parents say they're willing to let her go, but they said no way about she's going to live on campus. And because they figure Occidental College is not that far away, and it was true. It was only about 3 miles away from Lincoln High School. And so they're adamant. They will not accept the full ride, the full scholarship for Anita. Can you do anything? Can you explain to the parents? And I ask Anita. I say, oh, sure, Mr. Ingalls, sure, no problem. Anita, how bad do you want to go, mija? I want to go, Mr. Castro. She starts crying more. I said, all right, how much English do your parents understand? How much English do they know? None at all, Mr. Castro. I said, okay, keep a straight face. I said, señores, yo soy el señor Castro, este profesor de historia y gobierno y también consejero de la universidad. Fíjense, esta beca que le están dando a su hija es beca federal. Y aquí en este país no se juega con el gobierno federal. Si no aceptan esta beca, los van a multar hasta quizá de echarlos a la cárcel. Así que vale más que acepten la beca. And I wanted them to put that in the movie, but Moctezuma didn't anyway. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Hey, if you didn't understand Spanish, learn it. No, that's okay. But no. What I said, that's mean. That's being mean. You're right. That's being mean. Anyway, okay, doctor. What I said was, you know, folks, you know, I'm Mr. Castro, a teacher, social studies teacher, history, government. I also a counselor, part-time college counselor. And you know, this grant or this scholarship that your daughter is being offered at from Occidental is a federal scholarship. And in this country, you don't fool around with the federal government. If you don't accept this scholarship, they're liable to fine you. In fact, they might even throw you in jail. So if I were you, I'd accept the scholarship. So anyway, you know, they did. So, by the way, you know, many of the young people that were missed in the movie were the young people that the panel was talking about in Dr. Garcia, the college students just like you. It reminds me of Kirchhoff Hall. It reminds me of L.A. State. It wasn't Cal State then. It reminds me of SC. It reminds me of Northridge. It reminds me of Long Beach State. The kids were so anxious to help. It was beautiful. And I wanted them depicted in the movie. For example, Juan Gomez Quiñones, Dr. Juan Gomez Quiñones, History Department, UCLA, he was a conspirator. He was a hero. Because you see, there was a kitchen cabinet that I had. And yes, Moctezuma was the one that dropped the ball. He was my communications officer. And what he was communicating with, I don't know, but he screwed it up. But and I had Monte Perez, Dr. Monte Perez, who was later head of the United States Testing Service. Now he's, I think he's at Chapman or Citrus or Golden West, Unit College. Golden West, I think it's Golden West. And then we had Hank Lopez today, Dr. Hank Lopez at Cal State Northridge. We had Carl Vasquez today, Carlos Vasquez, Dr. Carl Vasquez, University of New Mexico. Susan Racho, producer. Film producer, lots of times works for ABC. I mean, it was an intelligentsia of young kids who were willing to give up, in part, their college careers or put them on hold. Carlos Munoz, Dr. Carlos Munoz, later University of California, doctor. They all became doctors, and they were very successful. And I would have loved to have seen them in the movie depicted individually. But I guess Eddie Olmos and Moctezuma are all from Monterrey because they didn't want to spend any more money to have all these additional characters. But it would have really been worthwhile. And maybe one day when you get a Moctezuma to come over here or Eddie Olmos, ask him about that. You know that because the conspirators, and I guess they should have been in jail with me because really they were the ones that they were conspiring. That shows you how bad the intelligence was with the district attorney's office. We were arrested, and sad to say, we were arrested the weekend prior to Robert Kennedy being assassinated. And as, when we got out of jail, or at least we got out of jail because Robert Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy kicked in to bail us out. We eventually got out of jail on our own recognizance, meaning we didn't have to pay anything. But, you know, hey, when I went to jail, let me tell you, some of these guys that went to jail, they went to jail in the lightweight jail, some of the 13. It was only Carlos Munoz and I that went to the county jail where O.J. Simpson had been. They gave us our outfits. They weren't these jumpsuits, real stylish orange jumpsuits that O.J. Simpson was in. Hell no. We were with blue Levi's and light blue shirts. Counties, they called them. Now, this is counties, cabrones. You know, it was so bad in there that I thought I was going to see James Cagney or Humphrey Bogart coming out of holding a tray. I mean, that was a tough prison. But anyway, so, and we were in there with, you know, when you go into a felony prison like the Cali County was, you know, there's murderers in there. Some guy was in the cell with us that had slit his wife's throat. You know, a couple of guys had shot people. You know, one of them was a burglar. But, I mean, it was heavy stuff. And, you know, the cells that they made, you know, man's inhumanity to man is the prisons. The cell was small. It was like a telephone booth. And yet they had five guys in there. Five guys. And so if you were the last guy in there, you slept on the floor. They gave you a mattress and, boy, on the floor. And then all night long, I remember, because I was the fifth man in that cell, I kept going like this and scratching my nose. Cucarachas were going around having a field day on my nose. I mean, dead city. But anyway, they send you so that you won't want to go back anymore. But anyway, that's another story. You got to read Dr. Garcia's book, and we'll give you more of what was going on. But seriously, It was beautiful. The dignity and the beauty of responsibility that these young folks took, just like the responsibility you have here today, that you're going to all graduate from here. And as I tell all my young people at the youth conference, not only are you going to graduate, but you're going to go on and get your master's. You're going to go on and get your PhD. I want you to get all your papers. I don't mean your green cards. I mean your PhDs, so that we can really start kicking ass. Because we have to knock over the Catholic Church, folks. You know, the Catholic Church is tough. We're going to have to get involved in the Catholic Church. And I'll tell you how. Catechism. Very simple. You know, I pattern what we're trying to do with the Jews and what they've done. I really respect and admire the Jews. Think about the bar mitzvah. That's why they're so successful. The bas mitzvah. They have pride in being judios. And where do they learn it? Not only in their homes, but they go off into the temples at 8 years of age and they get trained on their history, the Hebrew history, language, traditions, all that stuff. They come out of the bar mitzvah, man, really feeling tall. I learned all about that because when they transferred me from Lincoln High School, 95% Latino, to North Hollywood, 95% white, there was a big percentage of juditos there at North Hollywood High. And they kept inviting me to their bar mitzvah, so I went. Hell yes, I went. And you know, there, it was so beautiful to see. It was like our confirmations, okay, in the Catholic Church. But they didn't do it with 200. See, they didn't do it with lining us all up like the Catholic Church. And some guy that looks like Superman comes in with a cape and he slaps everybody. And I said, orale. No, the Judeos do a different thing. One kid is going to be bar mitzvah. And they bring him presents. And there's always one long present. And he opens it up. And it's a gold pen from Uncle Sid. Because with that pen, he's going to write his first prescription as a doctor. Can you believe the effect it has on a little 12-year-old? I mean, he's ready to climb big mountains. We need that in our community. And it would be so simple to do it at catechisms on Saturday morning. You volunteering as college students when you're down there, when you're down or wherever, whatever city you're from, to volunteer to not only talk about the catechism they talk about, and I was a kid, I said, all these white saints you folks talking about. In fact, when I went to North Hollywood, I said, you know what? You all look like Christmas cards to me. You look like the Virgin Mary, puros güeros, you know, yeah? That's it. What color is white? God. I mean, what color is God? White. But see, anyway. Okay, those are it, folks. Those are the jokes. Anyway, I'm good. But no, seriously, the effect that it would have would be tremendous on our community. Because you see, in order for a kid to succeed in school, he has to feel competent himself. Notice what some of these learned vatos say. And one, for instance, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some of you may remember in American history, a guy by the name of Edward R. Murrow. He was a very famous newsman. I hope you take American history, 20th century American history, and World War II and beyond. Edward R. Murrow worked for CBS. He said this in 1961. You can deny a people's heritage, but you cannot deny the responsibility of the results. So what he's saying here is that you need a very strong self-image to succeed. He's not the only one. Justice Antonin Scalia, to the right of Attila the Hun. He's one of the justices, okay, of the Supreme Court. If you lose your heritage, you lose part of yourself. He's saying that. I mean, point blank. Now look and see and think, listen to what Ruben Salazar said. No man can find a true expression for living who is ashamed of himself or his people. Ruben Salazar. And you see, that's what we're looking for in the classroom. That's what we're looking for at catechism. For young people to feel competent as they walk into the classroom. I did a study, and I guess Dr. Garcia can detail it more. But I did a study that probably should have been beyond a master's, a PhD study, checking 500 chavalitos, ninth graders at the time, from five junior high schools in East L.A. and Central L.A., Stevenson, Griffith, Belvedere, Virgil and Berendo, comparing ninth graders, U.S.-born ninth graders, Chicanitos, Latinos, with Latino-born ninth graders. Okay? This is the ninth grade now, and I had the CUME cards as well as talking to some of them individually and comparing how well they were doing. Guess what? The immigrant kid was doing better than the U.S.-born kid. Why? Because, you see, he had had some schooling in his native country. If he had had. If he didn't, well, he was in the same boat that the U.S.-born were. But if he had had at least 1 year of school in his home country, he was doing much better than the American-born. Because, you see, he had felt that he could learn from the beginning. He had pictures of people that looked like himself all over the classroom. You see? Yeah, there were people of heroes with his last name. Los Niños Héroes de Chapultepec, Cuauhtémoc. I mean, they were climbing mountains, these little guys. They knew they were going to succeed. In spite of the fact that the teacher didn't know Spanish, I had that experience. And this is another story. I'll tell you about that later, or read Dr. Garcia's book. But anyway, kids, and this is where we came up with the idea of real bilingual education. See, we weren't talking just a language. When we proposed, and this is heavy, kids went out proposing bilingual education, bicultural. Hell yes, they did. They went out for teacher training. Hell yes, they did. They went out for more counselors. Hell yes, they did. They went out for smaller classes. Hell yes, they did. They went out for more college counselors. And this is funny. You know, if they claim they want us all to get a good education and have the opportunity to go to college. In 1968, each school had one college counselor, right? Today, 2008, each school has one college counselor. Does that change? Hell no. But you see, we wanted, and those kids that I compared were doing much better because they did feel that they could succeed. It was inside of them. And then if you multiply that with teachers that have an appreciation for those young people, a real appreciation, and want them to learn, and know that if they fail a kid, it's not the kids that's failed, it's they as a teacher that have failed. I always felt that. If I failed a kid, it wasn't him, it was me. I was going to grab him by the ear and, God damn it, you're going to pass my class. And, God damn it, you're going to get a library card. Before you're out of here, I'm going to make you get a library card. You're going to go to the library and get it. You're going to stand up in front of the class and do a term report. No, Castro, hell yes you are. You're going to stand up in front of the class and do a term report. No, Castro, I've never done it. Well, cabrón, you're going to do it now, and you're not getting out of here. You know, kids would come to constantly to check out of the class. You're too hard, Castro. Bullshit. You're right here, mijo. You ain't going nowhere. I even had to literally kidnap kids to San Jose State. You know, one kid, they used to call him Tamal. He was Salvadoran. Damn good football player. When I told him, you're going up to San Jose State, he says, that's too far, Castro. I says, hey, the other day I saw you talking to the Marine recruiter. I says, yeah, I can be a Marine, man. I'll be bad. I says, you know how far they're going to send you? Capital of June, man, South Carolina. I mean, you're talking about 400 miles, 375 miles to San Jose State, and you're not concerned about 4,000 miles, 3,000 miles to South Carolina? No, cabrón, you're going up there. So he did, and by the way, he became the first Salvadoran kid to play Division I football at San Jose State. Another, give me a hand. I really got to me when he played against Stanford. He really did. Tamal. There was Tamal there playing to the middle guard. But anyway, continuing on this thing that I'm going all over the place. The super credential that I'm talking about is doable. And then we can really strengthen Chicano studies up and down the country, because that was the original intent, to be able to have training for teachers and well as everybody else going into the community, so they could really have an appreciation of the beautiful people that we really are. And it's true. From being the first people here, the very generous first people of the Western Hemisphere, When the Easterners came, we opened our doors to them. We didn't used to have locked doors, by the way. We used to have money in a basket in the front room in case one of our neighbors needed money in the middle of the night. He could come and borrow it, and nobody could complain. This is a beautiful cultural thing that we had, and you know, that's who we are, and we're just as American as everybody else, and our culture is not contrary to anything. We're very conservative in most ways. You know, very conservadores, family, love, and we're very chivalrous. We're not machismo crap. We're very chivalrous. You know, the idea of respecting women and respecting our family comes from the knights, the caballeros. That's what a knight was, a caballero. Respect the women in the family. You never abuse that person. And as I tell the kids, and I told the kids, I used to tell the kids, and still do, you know, ladies, one thing I don't want you to do is get married before you have a good education. You know, because you know, boys in school are good for four things. Your mother didn't send you to high school to find a husband. She sent you to school to get an education. And boys are only good for four things, mijas. They're good to carry your books between classes. They're good to give you chocolate rabbits and little roses chocolate rabbits at Easter and roses at Valentine. They're good to take you to prom and grad night and to get you pregnant, not necessarily in that order. You see, so boys are like buses, hija. They come, a new one comes by every 5 minutes. So I don't want you getting, you know, and I'm continuing with that theme because it is a curse. You know, the buggy brigades continue in our barrios. And that's terrible. And so I want to leave you, as I leave all lectures that I do, from high school even to college. It's a little corny, but I do it. This is the Ten Commandments, the Bill of Rights, the greatest document that is ever shown to you or anybody else in your life. And this is it right here. Okay? I've even blown it up. It says here, Castro, high school teacher, says if you don't graduate from high school and don't go to college and finish, you belong in his famous MRP club and should pick your spot below. Now, what's MRP? Well, I had a young man by the name of Abel in my 11th A class. And if I could have, I would have given him A-E-E, a plus, because that kid was bright. But in the 11th grade B, second part of history, he didn't come back. I said, hey, where's Abel? And he said, oh, he dropped out to get married, Castro. Ooh, que la fregada. I said, you know what? Bring him back to school so I can put the letter P on his forehead. And somebody said, no, Castro, put RP on the forehead. And some kid on the other side said, MRP. It looks more fancy, more uniform. I said, what's MRP? Muregate, pendejo. So it says here, Castro says that if you don't graduate from high school and go to college and finish, you belong in this Muy Requete Pendejo Club and should pick your spot below. And there's a lot of spots right here. First one, pendejo optimista. Cree que solo es pendejo. The next one, pendejo telescópico. Hasta de lejos se nota que es pendejo. The third one, pendejo fosforense. Hasta en la oscuridad se nota que es pendejo. And the final one I leave you with, and I even said this at graduation, I think the last time I was here in Santa Barbara. Pendejo estudioso se aplica mucho en aprender puras pendejadas. Thank you. So, I don't know. What's the key?
We're not going to take any questions.
Okay, sure. Okay.
Sal, that was just tremendous. Everyone is invited to stay for the reception, to meet Sal Castro individually, the panel members individually. We'll have food and drink, and then the mariachi integral is going to start performing in just a few minutes. Thank you all for coming. Thanks, Sal Castro. Thanks, the panelists. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.